This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. And if you'd like to join our conversation, please give us a call. We're ready for your input at 877-217-5757. You can send us an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. And a reminder that you can go to our Facebook page. We'd like to see you there and to like our show. And you go right to Talk Louisiana. And podcasts are available anytime, day or night, at talklouisiana.org. With us to begin is the fabled political consultant, the Hall of Famer Ray Strother. He is now at Northwestern State University. As we know, Raymond Strother is a person who began his career in Louisiana, native of the area of Texas that is famous for many things, but he came to Louisiana from Texas to come to Louisiana State University, where he was the Daily Reveille, editor of the Daily Reveille, and the rest, as they say, is history. He moved to Washington, D.C. in the year of 1980 as one of the few political consultants to be in the Beltway, and now there are literally thousands of them teeming as they assess what's going on and try to get clients, and many believe that's one of the issues we have in American life, but we'll talk with Ray Strother about this and more as we move along, because today the ultimate politico, Joe Biden, announced that he is running for president. No surprise, Biden will be 77 years old in December. So that would mean that if he were to take the oath of office on January 20th, 2021, he would be 78, the oldest man to ever take the oath of office. And if he were to serve 8 years, he would leave at the tender age of 86 years old. This is a man who's had a brain aneurysm, who is certainly a resilient and vibrant man at 76. But Ray Strother, that seems to be the biggest question about his viability. What do you think?
I'm a friend of his, so I can't be too critical. I don't want to be too critical. But age is absolutely a factor, because the country right now is looking for new and fresh, I'm afraid. And although I'm going to support Joe in every way I can as far as he goes, he doesn't fit the profile right now of what people are looking for.
Well, the Democrats have 20 candidates now. Many of them, of course, are to the left side of the political spectrum. And when I say left, we're talking about way left of center. Joe Biden is considered by many to be a moderate. I'm sure others would not consider him to be a moderate. But based on comparison of his fellow Democrats, he may very well be the least liberal of the candidates currently running for president. Does that help him or hurt him?
I think it helps him, because I think that when that people find someone like Joe, who's probably to the right of everybody else in this pack of candidates, I think people also are looking for stability. And he's a calm, stable man, beyond scandal. And I think, as you said, age will be a problem, but I'm hoping he can overcome that. If not, there's some good candidates. Unfortunately, the party now is so splintered by left and right that no matter who gets the nomination, they've got to deal with the side that didn't get the nomination. And right now, some of the strongest voices in the Democratic Party are women. So no matter what Joe does, even if he wins the nomination, I think we can all expect a woman vice president if Joe should win the nomination. It's going to be a very difficult primary season.
877-217-5757 is your number. Barry in Mid-City. Barry, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Raymond Strother.
Yes, good morning. I'm wondering if the way in which Bill Clinton brought the Democratic Party, in my opinion, back kind of to the middle, if you will, of the liberal spectrum, if that might help now with Biden.
That's a really good question, and your listener is completely right. Clinton worked hard to go back to the middle, and I think Biden's already there. So he represents, I think, the middle of the party, the sane wing of the party. So that'll be to his advantage. But Clinton did that to get elected. And as I say, Joe Biden's already there.
Gustavo writes, would I have swum naked in front of coworkers that had to be present as the female Secret Service agents had to when Biden was swimming as vice president? I would have been fired and accused of sexual harassment. The Me Too movement applies to everyone except leftist liberals, writes Gustavo. Joe Biden, with all of his sexual deviations, may be our next president. Would it not be a kick if he'd invite Slick Willie Clinton to be his VP? And too bad Michael Jackson is dead. He could be Secretary of State. That's from Gustavo. Now, when it comes to sexual misconduct,
that's not worthy of response.
What about Trump?
That's actually a comedic routine. What about Trump, a serial adulterer who's now in trouble for paying off porn stars? So no, let's get away from that.
Well, and of course,
the great silliness.
Trump also, in his own words, which we have played on this show, told Howard Stern when he was head of the Miss USA pageant that he would hang out in the dressing room as, of course, the owner of the pageant and watch these girls get dressed so he could inspect matters, as he put it. 877-217-5757, Jeff downtown. Jeff, good morning. You're on with Ray Strother.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mr. Strother. Thanks for having me on. I just want to say I welcome Joe Biden to the race. I really hope that he is the move that the Democrats make, because I think he is the sanest among the ones that are running. He would represent a really good contest. You know, I think that he's left of Donald Trump, but I think Donald Trump would move to the left in reaction to Biden, because Trump has really never been a true conservative, and I think it would be a worthwhile race, and it would engage the minds of the people that are out there voting. So I welcome him there. I'm a little disappointed in his start. I think that the insinuation, or again, basically calling Donald Trump a racist based on Charlottesville and the words that were taken out of context there, is really an unfortunate way to start. I think Joe Biden has more to offer than that.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Raymond Strother?
Oh, I don't think the words were taken out of context, and I'm convinced he's a racist. There are just too many examples, but I hope we can rise above all that in this election. We have some real serious problems. We've lost all of our edge in the world. Our foreign policy is in shambles because we have somebody who doesn't understand anything about foreign policy and refuses to listen to people who do. So I think there's some real serious issues in this country. And I hope we don't get off into Charlottesville or anything about racism or sexual misbehavior. We have some serious problems.
Well, the president has already he's already gotten a nickname for Joe Biden. Sleepy Joe is the nickname. Not Sloppy Joe, but Sleepy Joe. And Biden is, as we know, he has a temper, Raymond Strother. I have a feeling at some point Biden may take the bait.
Maybe so, but this fifth grade thing that Trump does, naming people, I know who you are, but what am I, sort of thing, is so beneath the presidency. He first has to have a nickname because he lacks intellectual depth to talk about issues. So I want to dismiss that also, but how can you dismiss everything Trump does? I mean, there's nothing serious there.
Well, it's been a week, only a week, believe it or not, that the Mueller report was released, and once again, volume 2, page 78, when Jeff Sessions told the president that a special counsel had been appointed, the president slumped back in his chair and said, "Oh my God, this is terrible. This is the end of my presidency. I'm effed." That shows that the president was not very pleased about this investigation, to say the least, and it kind of led to a lot of other things. Do you think there was obstruction, Ray Strother?
I don't think there's any question of it, and I think Mueller came to that opinion. But he had a very narrow charge, the thing he was supposed to do, and according to what the Justice Department told him to do. So he then threw it back in the lap of the Congress. Now, what does Congress do with it? If you can't indict the president, and the Justice Department says you cannot, the only other thing you can do is impeach. And I think that'd be a terrible thing. I think the voters can impeach him in about a year and a half.
Now, the president is fighting a request to have people like Don McGahn, his former counsel, testify. McGahn says in the Mueller report that Trump wanted him to fire Bob Mueller. But the president is trying to stop any appearance by these people who are mentioned in McGahn's case more than 150 times in the Mueller report. What do you make of this?
Well, I think Trump, again, is trying to cover up. He says that he didn't tell McGahn that. McGahn, under oath, said that Trump told him to fire the FBI director. So Trump never put himself under oath. And the reason he didn't put himself under oath to the committee is the people around him knew that he would lie and would be charged with perjury, because a man can't seem to say three sentences in a row without lying.
877-217-5757. We'll return in 90 seconds with more insights from Raymond Strother right here on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 for this final segment with Ray Strother, the Hall of Fame political consultant from the Beaumont, Port Arthur area of Texas. And he came to LSU and he wrote about his career that spans now over a half century in Falling Up, one of the best political books of all time. And he is now teaching, as he has for many years, at Northwestern State University in Natchitoches, where he joins us. Usually Ray is at his home in Bozeman, Montana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And we're going to talk to Ray about a few different matters. But a listener notes that the Democratic Party, based on its people running for president, seems to have moved left of center to the point that some of these candidates, if they were to get the nomination, might not be electable. This comes on the day that Joe Biden gets in the race. What if Bernie gets the nomination or somebody like him? Can a person that far left, an avowed socialist, beat Donald Trump?
It really depends on how much people hate Donald Trump. I mean, he's polarized this country, and there are a lot of people, and I don't know how many, I haven't seen a poll on it, who would vote for a chipmunk than they would Donald Trump. So if Bernie got the nomination, which as a Democrat I'm hoping does not happen, his only chance would be aligning all the people who dislike Donald Trump, and there are tens of millions.
Well, there are very few people who have had the varied background of Raymond Strother in handling political candidates, and we're going to get to some of those stories, and people in other walks of life. But if Trump, let's turn the clock back a decade or two, and if Trump were to call you back in the day, you represented Democrats, although you did represent Buddy Romer at one point. Would you handle him, or would you say, no way?
Oh, no way. I probably turned down as many candidates as I went to work for. His reputation was well known. I knew professionals who had done work for him in New York when he was a businessman and had been stiffed, public relations people. He always wanted to be in the newspapers and on the radio and television. He never got enough publicity, so he would hire people out of my profession. Then he wouldn't pay them. So, no, I wouldn't have come even close to it. Had he been a Democrat, I wouldn't have come close to him.
Well, Raymond Strother has spent many hours in private meetings in various places and mansions in the United States of America, in Georgia, Arkansas, Louisiana, and name three states. In Arkansas, he was once there when Bill Clinton slugged his pollster, Dick Morris. In Louisiana, you moved in with Buddy Romer.
And, I did.
Yes, and a story that I didn't know until very recently is that you also moved in at one point with Al Hurt. How did that happen?
Well, Al went to the grocery one day. This story is a little complicated. Went to the grocery one day, and the grocer said, "Mr. Al, we can't give you any more credit. You haven't paid your bill for 6 months." He said, "What?" So then he goes home, and that afternoon the homestead calls him and tells him he hadn't paid his mortgage. And he had a deal with his manager that the manager, he played the horn and the manager took care of all the money. So Al looked around. He had lost his sandwich shops, his record label, everything that he had from being a rich man, all of a sudden he was a very poor man and in bankruptcy. And he had an emotional problem with it. Some say a nervous breakdown. I don't know. So Judge Edmund Reggie from Crowley called me and said, go stay with Al and make sure he doesn't do anything that will endanger his career, because there were all sorts of rumors about things he was doing at his club on Bourbon Street. And I moved into the house, Al's house, and sort of just was his shadow for several, 2 or 3 months.
In New Orleans?
And in New Orleans, yeah.
Where did he live?
He lived on the lakefront. He had a big house out on the lakefront. And he would go to his club in the afternoons and just sit there. He was in a state of deep depression. And I would go sit with him. And I grew so fond of this man. I think he's one of the nicest men I'd ever met in my life. And that was one of his problems. Anybody asked Al, I need $1,000 for Friday, he would reach into his pocket if he had it and give it to you. And people took advantage of Al. But he was a great man, and he had to do a big comeback. And I was part of that comeback, although I didn't do anything really, but sit around with Al and sort of offer some stability. And for me to offer stability was something. But Al then came back, and he came back big time. He started going back to the Johnny Carson show and doing appearances, and all of a sudden his fees went up, and he started playing gigs all over the country. I went with him once to Hawaii for one of the performances, and all of a sudden he was back on top. But as soon as he was back on top, I turned over the shadow business to a woman who took over all his affairs, his books, his accounting, everything. Later married him. So anyway, that was my experience with Alan, one I'll never regret and I'll always treasure.
What did Miles Davis say of Al Hirt?
Johnny Carson made sort of a disparaging remark about Al Hirt being just a popular horn player. And Miles Davis said, Johnny, I can't blow with Al.
Well, remember Al got hit in the face with a brick. He broke his jaw and Mardi Gras. He loved New Orleans, and what idiot would throw a brick at Al Hirt? But he came back from that. That would be like a great running back coming back from an ACL or an Achilles tendon. He was a tenacious player. He died on the 27th day of 1999, 27th day of April. He was a man at that time. He was 76 years old, and what a life he had. He was at the first New Orleans Jazz Fest, by the way, 1970. This is the 50th anniversary, the one that's going on as we speak, opening today. But Al Hirt was there in the year of 1970, and it was not at the fairgrounds. It was at the current-day Congo Square, then known as Beauregard Square, and the crowd in 1970 for the Jazz Fest, 350 people.
I was there.
You were in the 350.
I was in the 350. You know, his friends didn't call him Al. They called him Jumbo. Yeah. And, you know, to be an insider, if you called him Jumbo, people knew you knew Al very well.
Well, another person we lost recently who was not as well known as Al Hirt, but people in Baton Rouge knew him well, and he was a public relations specialist, a Marine veteran of the Korea War, died at 83, a really good man, and he ran the Tiger Stadium press box for about 3 decades. Leroy Coulter, he was quite a man.
Oh, he was beyond quite a man. He bordered on being a great man. Leroy lived in a duplex next to me. I was married and had a child, and Leroy lived on the other side. And before that, he had been my editor when I was a reporter for the Daily Reveille. And after that, he became editor of the Catholic Commentator. He had a really interesting career. He was one of the kindest, most generous men I've ever met in my life. And when his wife called me last week and told me about his death, I just sobbed, because I reconnected with Leroy in the last 3 or 4 years, because living in Washington for decades, I lost contact with a lot of people I shouldn't have. And the last 3 years, every time I'd go to Baton Rouge, Leroy and I would have lunch. I think you and I had lunch with Leroy one day.
We did.
Yeah, we did.
That simple joke.
He was just a great friend, and it's a great loss to me and his family. And his son's a retired policeman, Baton Rouge policeman. His daughter, I don't know exactly where she is, but it's a great, they're a great family.
Well, Ray Srother, we're glad you're still in the game and still at Northwestern State, where he is teaching young people. One of your proteges was part of a Pulitzer Prize advocate team, Jim Musty, and he did a great job with the advocate, and he was a student of yours at Northwestern State.
Yeah, he called me, and all I could hear was champagne corks popping and people screaming behind him, but the 2 minutes after it was announced, he called me to tell me, so I was very proud of him.
Well, thank you, Ray Srother. See you soon.